12 minutes later in the upstairs gym area, the giant was standing in front of the mirror, a 100-pound dumbbell in each hand, swaying slightly and rhythmically, veins like worms along his arms, biceps as big as soccer balls. Arnold Schwarzenegger, you can hit the showers. The guy grunted, growled, groaned, counted lifts. 6, 7. It was 11:30 at night. The gym was practically empty. Murado walked over to the giant, stood next to him, stared, arms crossed. The giant ignored him, began the count over again. 1, 2, 3. Murado picked up a 65-pound dumbbell, did 2 lifts in time with the giant, heavy on freshly worked biceps. 4, 5. Dropped the dumbbell on the giant's foot. He screamed like a stuck pig, dropped his dumbbells, grabbed his foot, jumped on one leg, eyes teared up. Murado thought, poor stupid oaf, you should have taken a step back and raised your guard instead. Murado swung with full force at the guy's other leg. 330 pounds hit the floor. Murado over him, unexpectedly quick, careful to keep his back to the window, pulled his gun, Smith & Wesson Sigma 38. The barrel pushed into the giant's mouth. Murado released the safety. Listen up, kiddo. My name is Murado Slavovic. This is our club. Never so much as set foot here again. If you have any foot left, that is. The giant, as passé as a reality TV celeb 3 months after the fact, realized he'd lost face. Maybe forever. Maybe he was done for. Murado got up, angled the gun down, aimed at the giant, his back to the window, important. The giant remained lying on the floor. Murado stepped on his bad foot, 265 pounds of Murado on fresh crushed toes. The giant whimpered, didn't dare to wriggle away. Murado took note. Was that a tear he saw in the corner of the giant's eye? He said, time to limp home, Tiny Tim. Curtain.
Ah, that is wonderful. You do very well in English. Tell me about the way you write your fiction, the short, punchy sentences, the in-your-face violence. This, I have to say, is not my image of Swedish crime fiction.
No, I see myself as a hybrid between American and Scandinavian traditions, and I get a lot of my inspiration from American crime writers rather than Scandinavian ones.
Which American ones?
I'm greatly influenced by James Ellroy, for example, Dennis Lehane, and older ones like Raymond Chandler and Elmore Leonard. Hard-boiled, much focus on dialogue and scenery and character, maybe not so much focus on plot, whilst Scandinavian is more, I think, has more in common with the traditional British jigsaw sort of mystery, whodunit murder kind of fiction. Mm-hmm. And that also goes for my language. I write about true crime, a lot of what's really going on in Sweden nowadays. And it's violent. It's a lot of...
So this is not fast-paced. I mean, I've read the Stieg Larsson novels. I've read a lot of Henning Mankell. Yeah. This is quite different.
Yeah,
in
this
that
is
world.
My goal is to turn Henning Mankell style 180 degrees upside down and really expand the limits for Scandinavian crime fiction. And that also goes for the language, where I sort of try to create a language that, in its very style, is hard cut and stylistically violent. Much more like James Ellroy or dialogue of Dennis Lehane, for example, than you will find in Mankell.
So are you saying that Mankell is not really depicting the Sweden that you know?
Oh, not at all. No, that is more of a... It's more of a genre, a style, where it starts off with a murder and then you have a police investigator investigating the murder, and at the end of the book you will have the solution to who did it. Firstly, murders are not that common, and especially not this bestial, you know, someone hanging upside down in a tree with a cross carved into his body. That just doesn't happen in Sweden. But what we do have is a lot of drug problem, gang violence, domestic violence, prostitutions, and so on. So I try to depict that word, and I try to use a language reflecting that word too, which is, for me, a bit of a curse and a blessing, because now there's a wave of Scandinavian crime fiction going all over the world.
And people are familiar with with Henning Mankell and then with Stieg Larsson, the Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, with a very sort of distinctive, and it presents an image of Sweden too. And these are writers who were politically on the left. They cared a lot about the social welfare system there. There was kind of a philosophy behind their
fiction. They have... want to convey this message of social criticism, which I think is quite typical for Scandinavian crime, or at least part of Scandinavian crime. Now, in that sense, I see myself as belonging to that tradition because my books are also really pointing to society with all its flaws and a society that is not as perfect as it should be, a society that really needs mending in a way. So in that sense, I feel that I belong to the same group as they do, but in stylistically and the crimes I do write about and the way I do write is very different from them. And it, I think this is also the reason my books have created an enormous response among the Scandinavian countries, because people have really been feeling that we want something new, we want something reflecting our societies.
So you're saying your books, I mean your depiction of the crime world is more realistic, more accurate than the tradition of most Scandinavian crime fiction.
No, absolutely. I mean, I do work. My work is, I'm a public defense lawyer, so.
So you work with these kinds of criminals.
I work with these kinds of criminals, or allegedly criminals, and I do see this world pretty at close hand. So yes, having said that, it's fiction. I mean, my characters are not real people, but a lot of the detail you will find in my books are. It's from the streets of Stockholm.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me briefly about this novel, Easy Money. How would you describe the main characters?
Well, I it revolves around three main characters, and they're very different, but they're also very similar in the way they strive for status and they strive to climb in sort of the social ladder of society and in the groups they belong to. And one of the characters is a Chilean immigrant who's at the start of the book is in prison, but he escapes from prison and he starts building up his way as a cocaine drug dealer. The main character is maybe even the sort of main character, is called JW, and he is from the northern part of Sweden, blue collar background. He moves to Stockholm, the inner city, and he wants to become a part of the posh sort of jet set upper class elite of the clubs, the nightclubs of Stockholm. But he can't really support that financially, so he also started to push drugs. And in that way, his life is crossing the life of Jorge, the Chilean immigrant. And thirdly, there's a Serbian hitman or torpedo who doesn't really want to be a hitman anymore because he has a daughter that he has to take care of. And there's an inner conflict in this, and his life is also sort of crossing the lives of the other two, and at the end there's a big crescendo. There's a lot more to it, but basically it's built around a lot of scenery and sort of anecdotes from Stockholm underworld.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that your day job is as a criminal defense lawyer. I mean, I don't know if you know people like this you've written about, but you know that world. I mean, these are some of the people you represent. How close is your fiction to the world that you've come to know?
Well, I try to make it as close as I can. At the same time, there's always this dilemma of client-attorney privilege. So, you know, I cannot write about real cases. I cannot write about real characters, but my writing is a patchwork. So a lot of the detail will be from that case or that case or that case. But on the whole, it will not be recognizable as a real case.
So do you actually take notes from your work and just sort of, okay, this is something that would work in a later novel?
Yeah, I take a lot of notes. If I come across something, maybe they use a way to use their mobile phones in order not to be wiretapped. So I do write that down, and I might use it later on as a piece of fact in my books. So, yes, I do. My books are very extremely popular among my books are the most borrowed, and they've been for years borrowed books in the Swedish prison library system. So
the inmates, they're like reading your books.
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, I think first of all they see that it's pretty close to reality. They see that the style is pretty close to how they actually do speak. And also I think they see that I don't try to depict the criminals as monsters. Because for me it's not a question of black and white, monster or angel. It's a question of shades of gray. And I'm interested in depicting individuals. And if I can move the reader just for 2 seconds into the head of the criminal and get the reader for a few seconds to identify with the criminal, then I have succeeded.
So how has this affected your law practice? I mean, do some of these people seek you out, want you to represent them because they've read your books?
Yeah, I mean, it's not bad to be known as an author in Sweden. But at the end of the day, you have to, you know, do your thing in the courtroom, and it doesn't matter if you wrote 100 books, it doesn't make you a better lawyer. It's more for me, it's, I mean, I choose to stick to my job as a defense lawyer, although I would be much better off financially if I just did writing. But for me personally, I like to have a proper job with an office and colleagues, and I think it's great, really exciting to be part of the legal world. So I choose to stick to that, but it is a bit stupid from a sort of
a financial perspective.
And stressful as well.
Do you like working with these people, representing the people you do? I mean, some of these elements from the criminal underworld?
I would say that I don't like them, and I sometimes hate what they have done. But I like defending a system, and I like being part of a legal system where anyone, no matter how heinous the crime is, has the right of a defense and the right of, you know, equality at arms, and really a system where you can't just charge someone and, you know, he has no right to defend himself. So I like that, and I'm also a bit of a, what do you call it in English? You know, I like to win. You know, so I like the fight. I like sort of the excitement in the courtroom.
So that's interesting. I mean, that's, you know, classic crime drama is what happens. You know, the culmination building up to what happens in the courtroom.
Yeah.
I mean, that gets you going.
Yeah. I mean, I use also some in my books. You will find that the cops are pretty not there, but they are there in the sense that I do sometimes insert protocols and promemorias and sort of documents from the legal world. So you might sometimes follow what the cops or the courts are trying to do, but they're always one step ahead.
Well, and that's also another big difference between your books and, say, Henning Mankell's. I mean, his are basically police procedurals. Mm. I mean, they're following on the trail of the detective who's trying to unravel the story. Cops don't really figure much in your books.
No.
At all. I mean, it's basically about the criminals.
Yeah, I had this case a couple of years ago. It was about three young men that went into an apartment and they beat up and robbed the people at the apartment. And we were having the trial for a couple of days. It's a very severe crime. They were facing long sentences. And at the end of the trial, the judge, she was turning to them and she asked, "Where do you see yourself within 5 years? Who are you within 5 years? What are you doing?" She was in effect extending her hand, really trying to get them to say maybe that they want to change their lives, get a job, study, become citizen. But she got quite the opposite reaction. They were standing up in the chairs. And I can tell you, standing up in a Swedish courtroom, that in itself is something very upsetting, because you sit down. Everybody sits down. It's not like in America. Anyway, they were standing up and they started shouting. And they said, "You don't understand anything. You don't understand the way we live. You don't understand that what we're doing is natural. This is the way, this life to us, it's normal." So I came home that night and I switched on my computer and I wrote my first fictional piece ever in my life. And it was a short story of a robbing and beating in an apartment. But I didn't write it from the perspective of a policeman coming in, investigating the crime scene and so forth, or from the perspective of a victim. I did write it seen via the eyes of one of the criminals, because I figured if in Sweden, Stockholm today, we have people for whom it's normal, it's a way of life. You know, I go to my job 9 o'clock in the morning, they go to their job and beat up people to commit these crimes. It also must be interesting and fascinating to be in the head of these people. And it had never been done before in Swedish literature. So it really, you know, it came as a bomb in the Swedish literary world and Scandinavia. So,
and it sounds like you're just more interested in their world,
I'm more interested
sort of the mindset of the criminal rather than of the police detective.
I'm interested in the mindset, because when crime becomes a part of culture, when it becomes part of your society in that way, which I think you've had in the US for many, many years, but we didn't have it that way. We had, you know, singular people committing crime, but we didn't have gangs. We didn't have organized crime. We got it 15 years ago, but until then we didn't have this culture of committing crime. So I think I find that very fascinating and interesting.
What's changed? Why is there more crime in Sweden?
I think it has to do with we imported some of the stuff from you guys. I mean, we got these prison gangs, Aryan Brotherhood, or this and that Brotherhood, and so forth. We got some of it from Denmark. We got, you know, Hells Angels. We got Bandidos and these sort of biker gangs. We got from Russia and the South Eastern Europe, and we got from, so we got this sort of culture of more mob-like criminal activity. Why? I think it has to do with that borders are not that strong anymore. We are in the European Union, which means people flow more freely.
Now, my sense is that most crime writers, fiction writers, often want to moralize about the tales that they're telling. I mean, the bad guys are usually punished at the end. As you say, the crimes are usually wrapped up. I mean, there's a whodunit quality, partly, I suppose, to make the reader feel good. You want the bad elements to be purged by the end of the story. Do you share that philosophy?
No. Quite the opposite. I'm a big fan of Dennis Lehane, for example. I don't know if you read Lehane's Gone Baby Gone, for example. At the end of that book, you will feel more confused morally. You will feel, you will continue think about that book, because at the end, status quo is not there. Chaos is still there. There's still a problem in the world. And I think that's how the world is. So I think that what you're mentioning is also a problem of genre literature, that it tries always to fit into the structure, and that's why a lot of the crime writing we see will never reach the quality of real literature, so to speak. I mean, it's good stuff, but it's sometimes you can feel that the quality is lacking. So I try to go away from that way of writing. I'm not so interested in moralizing. I'm not interested in a political agenda. I'm interested in pointing out that society is not perfect, but I have no solution to it, really.
Well, it's fascinating to hear you say this, given your day job as a lawyer, as a person who defends the kind of people you write about. I mean, it sounds like you feel some sympathy for them.
Absolutely. I feel sympathy because they're human beings. And for me, this is, you know, I have two messages with my writing. I have two goals. One is to entertain myself and my readers, because, you know, that is my first. My second goal is to move the reader and myself into the head of someone that you usually despise. It's about understanding someone else, another human being. And if I manage to do that briefly, if I manage to get the reader to hope that Jorge, the Chilean immigrant, is going to succeed when he's running away from the cops with a bag of cocaine, it sounds funny, you know, am I going to hope that someone is succeeding with the cocaine deal? But yes, if you do, you have also understood something of another human being. So at the end of the day, that will create more understanding and, you know, peace on earth.
You're sort of describing what literature can do. It can create empathy for characters unlike you. People who you might not like if you met them in real life. And I guess I'm wondering if you see that act of empathy as a writer, if there are parallels between that and whether you have empathy as a lawyer.
Well, I think definitely it goes hand in hand. Being a defense lawyer, I always try to bring out the best out of my clients. And I try to see them as, even though, as I said, sometimes, I mean, I definitely despise their acts. I try not to despise them as human beings. So I think that definitely is a parallel there. And my whole work, literary work, comes from my work as a lawyer. So it goes together.
Now, this book, Easy Money, has been made into a Swedish film, which will soon be released in the United States. What's that been like for you, seeing your fiction turned into cinema?
Yeah, that was very scary to hand over my little baby to someone else that was going to bring it up into a movie. And the movie is it's very different from the book. It's a two-hour movie. My book is 500 pages long, so they had to cut out and add and change and so forth. But on the whole, it's a very good movie. I didn't write the screenplay, but it's a very good movie because it's managed to capture the same feeling of the grittiness and the authentic feeling of the Stockholm underworld. So I feel it's a very good movie. It became a great success. You know, it came out at the same time as Avatar. Mm-hmm. So you had all over the world. So you had this billboard, Avatar number one, Avatar, Avatar, Avatar. And then you had Sweden, Easy Money suddenly, and then you had Avatar, Avatar. So the phone started ringing with the director. Unfortunately, they didn't ring in my phone, but they were ringing the director, and he went off to Hollywood, and he just came out with a movie called Safe House with Denzel Washington, which I think was a great success here in the U.S. So really, this Swedish movie became, I think it's a good movie.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any direct involvement in the making of the movie?
I'm a lawyer, you know, so I put in the contract that if I didn't approve it, they were not allowed to call it Easy Money, not use my name or any of my characters. So I had a pretty strong veto right there, but I didn't really use it because I don't know how to write screenplays and I didn't have the time really, and I trusted them. But yes, I did supervise the process, so to speak, but mm-hmm. It's a good movie. They're also a remake, maybe. There's a remake deal with the Warner Brothers in Hollywood, so we'll see what they do out of it.
Now, Easy Money is part of a trilogy. What's the status of the other books in the trilogy?
Well, my second book is does not have the same main characters, but it's connecting to the first book. It's the same universe, the same city. Some of the characters are the same, not the main ones. And my third book, actually, I do return to my main characters in the first and the second book, so it all ties together. I see my three books as one tale with different installments, and it's about a city, it's about a word, and it's about a couple of people inhabiting that word.
So where do you go from here in your fiction?
In my fiction, that's a very good question, because right now I have very severe writer's block. I spent 7 years writing these three books, and after finishing my third book, which was published quite recently in Sweden and Scandinavia, I felt all empty. I have sort of exhausted myself. I've been writing short stories. I'm publishing in a few countries in Europe a compilation of short stories by the fall, but I don't know where I'm going next, really. It can be, maybe I'm going to write love stories from Madison. I don't know.
So not necessarily more crime fiction.
I think I'm still close to crime fiction because, I presume I'm still there. But I'm experimenting. In my short stories, I'm experimenting with horror, science fiction, love, everything.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.